Chapter 5. A Cloth of Beaten Gold. It was about one of two things, Fiona decided as the taxi stopped in heavy traffic on Waterloo Bridge. She was either a woman on the edge of a nervous breakdown, making a serious mistake in her judgment, or it was about a boy delivered from or into the beliefs of his religion by the court. It could not be both. At her side was Marina Green, who was reading something on her phone. They had not spoken much. Fiona's phone was turned off, which was her only way of not checking texts and emails every 5 minutes. She had written, but not sent, a message. "You cannot do this." But he was doing it, and she was a bloody fool. This emotional language was quite new to her. It was a mix of anger, loss, and desire. She wanted him back. She never wanted to see him again. Guilt was also part of it, but what had she done? Lost herself to work, not given enough attention to her husband, let one case take all her time? But he had his own work and his different moods. She felt humiliated and didn't want anyone to know and would behave as if everything was fine. At last, they were on the Wandsworth Road and she could see the huge Edith Cavell Hospital in front of them. She liked hospitals. When she was 13, she fell off her bicycle on the way to school and had to spend a very nice week in one. She remembered the kind nurses and how clean everything was. The children's ward was full, so she had to be on an adult one. The other women there, some were seriously ill, were nice to her, and in the afternoons her friends visited. Because she was young, she herself was well protected from disease and death. Before and after lunch, Fiona would sit alone with a notebook on her knees, planning her future. A pianist, a vet, a journalist, a singer. She thought of university and a nice husband, beautiful children, a sheep farm, the perfect life. Back then, she had not yet thought of the law. On the day she left, she went around the ward with her school bag over her shoulder, saying goodbye to everyone while her mother watched. From then on, she had always thought of hospitals as kind places, and now, as she stared out of the window at the hospital, she experienced a feeling of excitement. She and Marina Green entered the building and went through long corridors and up some stairs until they found the lift. It took them to the 9th floor, and then another corridor took them to the intensive care ward. Two friendly nurses sat at the desk next to the entrance. They smiled and said hello to the two women, and then it was agreed that Fiona would wait outside while the social worker went in and explained things to Adam. When Marina had gone through a door to the right, Fiona turned to the nurses and asked about their patient.
"He's learning the violin," the first nurse said, "and driving us crazy."
The other one laughed.
"He's killing a cat in there."
"So what about this transfusion?" Fiona asked. They immediately stopped laughing. Then the first one said,
"I pray for him every day. I say to Adam, God doesn't want you to do this, darling. He loves you anyway. God wants you to live." "He's made his decision," said her friend sadly. "You have to admire him, living for his faith."
"Dying, you mean," said the first nurse. "That is a very confused boy in there."
Just then, Marina opened the door and raised a hand to Fiona before going back in. Fiona said, "Well, thank you."
"You go in there and change his mind," said the first woman. "He's a lovely boy."
When Fiona later remembered stepping into Adam Henry's room, the picture in her mind was confused. There was a lot to see and understand. It was quite dark, except for the light around the bed. Marina had just sat down in a corner with a magazine. The bed was surrounded by machines and tubes and bright screens that seemed to watch her silently, except that there was no silence because the boy was already talking to her. He was sitting up in the bed with pillows behind him. All around him were books, a laptop computer, a half-eaten orange, sweets, a notebook, and many pages covered in writing. It was the ordinary teenage stuff. She recognised it from the many visits of her nieces and nephews. He had a long, narrow face. It was ghostly pale, but beautiful, with purple shadows under the eyes and lips which were purple too. His eyes were huge and blue. He was very thin, and his arms hung like poles under the hospital clothes. He spoke quickly, earnestly, as he told her how strange it was that he had always known that she would visit him, that he thought he could tell the future. They'd read a poem in school which said that future, past and present were all one, and this was what the Bible said too. And if God, poetry and science all said the same thing, it had to be true, didn't she think? He fell back against the pillows, suddenly tired, and fought for his breaths. The fast bleeping sound from one of the machines told her how quickly his heart was beating. It was showing his excitement. She slowly sat down in a chair. Then she leaned forward and said that she thought he was right. In court, if different people all said the same thing, then it was more likely to be true. But not always, she added. Sometimes people in a group can all share a delusion. They believe the same false idea. That certainly happens in courts of law.
Like when?
Adam was still breathing fast, and even these words were difficult to get out. He stared up at the ceiling while she thought of something to say.
Some years ago, in this country, a number of children were taken into care by the authorities. Social workers believed that their parents had been doing terrible things to them. They said that the parents loved Satan, and what they were doing to their children was satanic abuse. Everyone hated the parents: police, social workers, newspapers, even judges. But later, the evidence showed that the parents were innocent. It was a delusion, a dream. People felt stupid and guilty, and very slowly the authorities returned the children to their homes. Fiona talked as if she was in a dream. She felt happy and calm, even though she knew that Marina would be amazed by her words. What was the judge doing, talking to the boy about a subject like this within minutes of meeting him? But what Marina thought did not really trouble her. She would do this her own way. Adam lay still, taking in what she had said. At last, his breathing now under control, he turned his head on the pillow and his eyes met hers. His look was dark and serious. The thing about Satan is that he's very good at putting an idea like satanic... what did you say? Yes, abuse, into people's minds. And then they find out they're wrong, so everyone thinks he doesn't exist after all. Then he's free to do his worst.
He's free to try and kill you with leukemia?
Yes, that sort of thing.
And you're going to let him? Adam pushed himself up, then touched his chin thoughtfully.
I plan to defeat him by obeying God. Have you come to change my mind? I think you have.
He was smiling widely now, his eyes bright and full of innocence. He kept changing how he behaved towards her. Now he was the naughty child holding his knees, and he was excited again.
I'll tell you why I'm here, Adam, Fiona said patiently. I want to be sure that you know what you're doing. Some people think that you're too young to be making a decision like this, and you're just obeying your parents and the elders. And others think you're extremely clever, and we should just let you do it.
And how am I doing so far?
He was playing a game with her, pulling her on to different ground where he could dance with her. He was trying to get her to say something interesting again. It occurred to her then that he was simply bored and that by planning to take his own life, he had made everything exciting. He was bringing lots of important adults to his bedside. If this was true, she liked him even more. Serious illness could not stop him from enjoying himself. So how was he doing?
Quite well so far, she said. You seem like someone who knows his own mind.
Thank you, he said in a sweet voice.
And if you know your own mind, you won't object to talking to me about your treatment. The doctor says that if he could transfuse you and add two drugs, you'd have a good chance of a complete and quick recovery. And without a transfusion, you could die. You understand that?
Yes.
And there's another possibility. Not death, Adam, but just some recovery. You could go blind, or your brain could be damaged. I'd just like to know that you've considered this carefully, that you may be ill and suffer for the rest of your life.
I'd hate it. I'd hate it.
He turned from her, clearly angry that she had so quickly cut into his good mood.
But I would have to accept it.
He was so thin. Someone should take this boy home and feed him up, she thought.
One of the nurses came in to check the screens. She must have seen that Adam was upset because when she left, she wiped the wetness from his eyes and said,
You listen carefully to what this lady has to say.
It lifted the mood in the room. Fiona didn't return to her next question. Instead, she nodded towards the papers on the bed.
I hear you've been writing poetry.
He seemed happy to be taken away from their last subject, and she noticed how quickly he could change.
I've just finished something. I could read it to you if you like. It's really short.
He reached for a sheet of paper near his knee, and then he stopped to cough loudly. When he spoke again, his voice was weak.
What do they call you in court?
Usually it's my lady, but you can call me Fiona.
But I want to call you my lady. It's wonderful. Please let me.
All right. What about this poem?
He leaned back against the pillows and stared at the sheet, trying to hear the poem through her ears. He was lovely, but so weak and easy to hurt. He must be much loved at home, she decided. He looked at her quickly, breathed in, and began.
My happiness sank into the darkest hole when Satan took a hammer to my soul. He beat it long and slow, and I was low. But Satan made a cloth of beaten gold that shone God's love upon all. The way with gold light is paved, and I am saved.
She waited for more, but he put the page down and stared at the ceiling.
I wrote it after one of the elders, Mr. Crosby, told me that if the worst happened and I have to die, it would have a wonderful effect on everyone.
He said that? Fiona asked.
It would fill our church with love.
So Satan comes to destroy you with his hammer, and without intending to, he turns your soul into a sheet of gold that reflects God's love on everyone, and for this you're saved, and it doesn't matter so much that you're dead.
My lady, you've understood it exactly,
the boy almost shouted in his excitement.
Mr. Crosby's going to try to get it published in the Jehovah's Witness magazine.
That would be wonderful, she said. You may have a future as a poet.
He saw what she was trying to do and smiled.
What do your parents think of your poems?
she asked.
My mum loves them, and my dad thinks they're okay, but he says they use the strength that I need to get better.
But what does my lady think? It's called the hammer.
He was so hungry for her to approve it that she paused. Then she said, I think it's excellent. The shape of it and those two short lines which balance everything. You're low, then you're saved. I like that. It's telling us that good things can come out of bad things. Isn't that right?
Yes.
And I don't think you have to believe in God to understand or like this poem. He thought for a moment and said, I think you do. She looked quickly down at her watch. She must soon return to the waiting court. He saw her do it.
Don't go yet, he said. Wait until they bring my supper.
All right, Adam. Quickly, before I go, show me your violin. It was on the floor by the bed. She lifted it up and put it on his knees.
It's only a school violin for beginners, he said, putting it under his chin.
She hadn't planned for him to play, but she couldn't stop him.
I've been learning for 4 weeks, and I can play 10 tunes, but this one is the hardest yet.
And then he began to play. She knew it well. This sad and lovely Irish song from the W.B. Yeats poem Down by the Sally Gardens. She and Mark Burner had played it together many times. And suddenly she began to sing with him.
In a field by the river, my love and I did stand. And on my leaning shoulder, she put her snow-white hand. She told me, take life easy, as the grass grows on the weirs. But I was young and foolish, and am now full of tears.
As they finished, a man came into the room with Adam's dinner. Marina had already gone out with a strange look on her face. Adam said,
Let's do it again.
Fiona shook her head as she took the violin from him and put it back under the bed.
Stay just a bit longer, please.
Adam, I really have to go now.
Then let me have your email.
Mrs. Justice May, Royal Courts of Justice, The Strand. That'll find me. She lay her hand briefly on his cold wrist, then went towards the door, without looking back.